Couple things I want to say about Song of Songs. The title itself, some Bibles say the Song of Songs, and other Bibles say the Song of Solomon, right? And this is just like an interpreter's decision, because the first verse of the whole book says the Song of Songs, which is Solomon's. So the Song of Songs, by that phrasing in Hebrew, it means this is the song of all songs. This is the chart topper, right? This is the best love song you have ever heard. That's what the poet is telling us right away. So this is the jam of all jams, right? That's what they're trying to tell us. And then the second, this title, in ancient literature, whenever they name someone, whether that be a ruler or someone in authority, this is saying, this is tipping the hat to the person who funded the project, right? This is their patron in the ancient world. Also known as sugar mamas, also known to us as commissioning an art project. So what's really cool is that in this book, The Song of Songs, which is Solomon's, this is an art project. These eight chapters of carefully packaged poetry is an art project that has been put together for all of us, right? It's been funded by Solomon. He actually didn't write this. He's actually nowhere else known in the book, which is funny because we always think, oh, this is the king's poetry. No, it's not. So first is the title. Second thing that's really important for us is the date. So being from Solomon, it's probably written in 96 to 928 BCE. So we're going to read poetry that was written 3,000 years ago, which is why it's going to be really strange and awkward at times. So you can blame it on 3,000 years of translation, right? And but it's also significant to us that this is poetry that has shimmered for 3,000 years, which is quite exciting, right? It has something that keeps on speaking to human beings. The structure. This is like, think of this, what's really helpful to me is when you read this, think of this poem as a dramatic dialogue in four voices. So you have a man's voice, you have a woman's voice, then you have the daughters of Jerusalem, almost like this choral interlude, and then you have this male, I call them the men of Jerusalem, like they enter this story too. So when you read it, think of this drama in four parts, right? Which brings me to Modern Family, right? We all know this show. We all love this amazing show, right? How many have watched Modern Family? Yes, amazing. We are used to dramas in sort of our American way of, remember there's three households, right? And remember every time there's one theme and the writers craft it really tightly so that you see this theme played out in all different four, all three households, right? And at the end you have this like really awesome moral lesson that everything's gonna be happy and good. This is the American sitcom, right? We love this. This is good stuff, right? And so what we are used to as an art form, this sitcom, this story of what this family is going through and how they made it through the struggles and the challenges, that is different from what the ancient world is used to. So when we read Solomon, the Song of Songs, it doesn't conclude as nicely as Modern Family. Sometimes you're wondering, how did they get from that poetic line to that other line? And ancient mind was okay with letting it looser than we are. We like to tie it up nicely in a bow as Americans, right? And there's nothing wrong with nice bows, right? However, in the ancient world, when you read this book, when you're saying, I have no idea how they jump from here to here, let it be okay. Just take a deep breath and remind yourself 3,000 years ago, translation. Two more things. We have perspective, right? Throughout this 3,000 years of interpreting this amazing book, Jewish rabbis have interpreted it in two very different ways. So some Jewish rabbis have interpreted it as this book is a book about human love, right? Just strictly literal. The love between a man and a woman in the context of marriage. However, Christian interpreters as well as Jewish interpreters, they've interpreted it also as this book is all about divine love, right? This book is about God's absolute bleeding heart for every human being. And so you see this tension in the conversation throughout these thousands of years. Is it about divine love? Is it about human love? Well, at St. Andrew Wildflower, we're about the both and here. We're always never about the either or option. So this week we're going to talk about this book, what it teaches us about human love. Next week we're going to talk about what it means, what it teaches us about divine love. And then the third week we'll mix them both together and you'll see how that comes out. It should be good. So lastly, this book is eight chapters. It takes you literally 15 minutes to read out loud. And you can download on iTunes the Bible Experience where Denzel Washington and his wife read it to each other. Oh, yes. Amazing, right? Amazing. It's all passionate and stuff, and you're like, whoa, this is in the Bible? And so lastly, the issue of canon. This is a big church word, but there's it's amazing, right, that in the middle of every Bible that's in every hotel everywhere, this little 8-chapter book, Song of Songs, is in the Bible, which means that for at least the last 1,600 years, it was copied by scribes. So early Christians and early Jews are copying this book by hand. And when it wore out on that parchment paper, they would recopy it again and again. And so one question for us to ask is, how did this poetry for 3,000 years sort of keep shimmering in hearts, right? And so what happened in the councils and in the creeds and all this tricky history is that the church affirmed that this book, this crazy, beautiful love poetry, is going to be a book that forms us and forms us again and again. It's going to be a conversation partner with us in all our faith, in all our living. So that's really significant that our early Christian relatives, that our forefathers and foremothers in the faith said, this book matters. This poetry has something to teach us, is a conversation partner in this life of faith. And I often think that we have not done enough with this book in our churches to really talk about human love and divine love and all the complicated, crazy, beautiful stuff of love, right? So the canon. And so then lastly, my favorite line in the Song of Songs is this: set me as a seal upon your heart, as a seal upon your arm, for love is strong as death, passion fierce as the grave. Its flashes are flashes of fire, a raging flame. Many waters cannot quench love, neither can floods drown it. If one offered for love all the wealth of his house, it would be utterly scorned. Amazing poetry, right? We could talk about that verse the whole time, but we're not going to do that. But what I hope that you get from this series is a sense of rekindled passion, a sense of stirring, a sense that you want to take this book home and read it over the next 3 weeks, that you want to read it to each other, that we want to start in our community reading this book together.